We're going to continue through Genesis together. This is our second last week of Genesis. So we've reached the halfway point today with chapter 25. There are 50 chapters in Genesis. We've seen the wonder and beauty of God's creation designed to glorify God in all his power and might. The creation of humans designed for a life of worship of God. By the third chapter, there was such a fall from the ideal with the first sin. Sin, as results, death, touched every area of creation, and the human beings designed to worship God. How can we worship God when we cut ourselves off, when we cut ourselves off from God by thinking that we live our lives our own way? How can we know God when we're far more interested in being gods ourselves? The effects of sin was deep and sudden. The next generation saw the first murder between two brothers. Sin was out of control to the point where God sent a flood to destroy the world, saving Noah, his family, and each kind of animal. But that does not solve the problem. But it did show how serious God takes sin. Think about how serious God takes sin to send a flood to wipe out the world. Remember, we have a holy, perfect, mighty, loving God who wants us to walk with him throughout our life together. And it's as though we use the most disgusting gutter talk to tell God off. We offend God by telling him off in the worst way possible. What does the human race deserve for such an insult to a completely holy and awesome God who's only shown love and goodness? Well, eternal death, and the Bible refers to that as hell. If we truly understand the depths of the insult to this perfect holy God, if we truly understand that, then we know that the punishment is just and right. God, however, does not leave things there. In Genesis 12, he makes a promise, and the final and complete fulfillment of the promise has not yet been completely played out. In Genesis 12, that's how Genesis 12 relates to Revelation 22. From the very first book of the Bible to the last, the final conclusion is the restored paradise, and we are on our way to that glory. Abraham was promised a land, a large family, and through his family be a blessing to the whole world. One of the things that you might find surprising is that God just didn't look for the perfect man. He didn't look for the perfect man to be his servant, people like Abraham or Isaac. We find God working through fallen human beings, sinful beings. You know the reason why, don't you? Because Romans 3:23 makes it clear, all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. It's true now and it's true then. God does not rely upon those people's ability to be perfect, or to even to do what he tells them to do. God makes a covenant of a promise to those people, and he tells them, I'm going to do this. God says, I will do this. So I'm going to read Genesis 12, but I'm just assuming there's a wind blowing through here. Do you want to shut the back door? Someone just allow the... I'm feeling the wind. I guess you guys are sort of... I think people can open if they need to come in and out. Genesis 12, 1-3. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land. I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be blessed. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse them. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. The fact that God would do this, God would ensure, he wouldn't just sort of hand it over as a task for Abraham. God said, I'm going to do this. He did not have to do anything. God said, I will do it. The fact that God shows mercy and grace and compassion to us is just amazing. God didn't have to show us love and mercy. He could condemn us. But God makes it clear that he's going to do something. And our response to God, like their response to God, needs to be, well, I'm just going to trust you, God, in whatever circumstance you bring me. That's what God wanted them to do. Trust in any circumstance. And that's the same for us today. Abraham and Sarah had that miracle boy Isaac, and Alan spoke last week about the remarkable testing of Abraham, which demonstrated the extent to which he was prepared to trust God. He was trusting God. Isaac was married to Rebecca and they had twins. The reason we have covered 25 chapters in, we're going to cover 25 chapters in 2 weeks, is because the narrative, the story is so detailed. And you've got to ask the question, why is it so deep? Everything is mentioned so thoroughly. Why is it? It's because Israel are remembering this just before they go into the promised land. They needed to know why they've been out of the promised land for 400 years. Had God failed his promise to Israel? Had God not been able to do it? Some may have thought that. But in the next 25 chapters, in the most remarkable detail, and it's an easy read, it is a good, easy read. Please read it. We have twins born, Esau and Jacob. Twins seem to be the flavour of the month, isn't it? And Esau and Jacob were nothing alike. Esau was that sort of man's man of the bush. He's probably the guy you'd want to be around. I reckon it'd be a lot of fun. But Jacob, he was cunning. He was rather sly. And he stole his brother's inheritance, his brother's blessing. And when Esau discovered it, he had to skip town. He had to go to Haran, the place from which his grandfather came, the place from his mother's birth. And that's where we're going to read from. He stole his brother's blessing. His mum said, "You better hightail it back to my old home patch." And this is where we're reading. He's on his way there. Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under the head and laid down to sleep. He had a vision in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land in which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you'll spread out to the west and to the east, north and south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I will be with you and watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you." When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place and I'm not aware of it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and watch over me on this journey I'm taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that I will return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone that I've set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that you give me, I'll give you a tenth." Jacob cheats his brother Esau. Esau should have got two-thirds of the father's property. Jacob cheats him, and prompted by his mum, goes off to her birthplace, fear of Esau killing Jacob. We do need to remember, this is not just a trip around the corner, is it? 1,200 kilometres. It's like from walking from Canberra to Brisbane. Jacob, travelling probably on foot, if he travelled 8 hours a day, it would have taken him 30 days a month to get there. 8 hours a day, every day. It was on the way that he came to this place to sleep, and he was obviously sleeping rough because if the best thing he finds is a stone for a pillow, you know it's pretty rough. Then he had this amazing dream, a stairway to heaven, angels going up, there is God in all his glory on top of this, on this ladder. He reveals himself to Jacob as the God of Abraham and his father Isaac. God is giving the same covenant to Jacob that he gave to Abraham and Isaac. Now remember, Jacob would have heard of this promise, wouldn't he? Jacob would have heard from his father. But this promise was not given to Ishmael. It was given to Isaac. It was not given to Esau. It was given to Jacob. And again, it's a promise about what God is going to do. God would give him the land, the north, the south, east and west of where he was. And all people of the earth will be blessed through his descendants. God says, I am with you, I will watch over you, I will never leave you until I've done what I've promised. This is the first time we believe that Jacob received this promise. And what a picture of God was given to him to reinforce it. He looked up this ladder, this remarkable staircase with angels going up, and he saw an image of God in all his glory. Could it have been done any more powerfully? Could it be done any better way? Could he have given the promise in any grander way? It was better than a blank check, because it's more than just money, it's a guarantee. What an amazing thing. Even Jacob recognises, verse 17, look what he says. He was afraid. Afraid. And said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Yet human mind, our human minds can't grasp the power of God. How can our tiny minds understand the infinite one, the all-powerful one? The reason I say this is because here God has given him the greatest promise of the Old Testament that's been just given to Jacob. And look what he says. He starts off with, if God is with me. If God is with me. What did God just say? I will be with you. So he's saying, well, if God is with me. And look what he's concerned about. If God is with me and he helps me in my journey and gives me food and clothes, God has just promised to give him this land. God has just promised to make his descendants like the dust of the earth. And Jacob is only worried about some food and clothes and getting back to his father's house. A few things to note here. I do believe that God powerfully came upon Jacob for a lot of good reasons, but I think one of the reasons why was he wanted him to know, this is your land. You are going to come back here. He was fleeing for his life. He was going to go and make a life somewhere else. Some of you folk have come from other countries, haven't you? And that you've made lives for yourself, home somewhere else. But God wasn't going to be settled for that. God is saying, you are going to come back here. I will bring you. Many other people in such situations would just settle somewhere else, start a new life. But God here, in a powerful way, tells him that he'd bring him back. Secondly, how often do we overlook the enormous promises of God and yet worry about the little things? Our prayers sometimes show the extent of our faith. God, please give me that job. that home, that car, those friends, those things, that holiday, good health, and then I will praise your name. I will be your child. I will follow you wherever you go. God has given you, me, each one of us, a family. His family. He has given us His name. We have the family name of God. Not only that, we've been given a future share in the glory of Christ. I don't know how that works. That's what the scriptures tell me. You and I have a future share in the glory of Christ. God knows that we need food and shelter, relationships. But don't be limited in your thinking to assume that God's promises are only about those little things that He looks after. Also, don't assume that just because this Jacob had a remarkable revelation of God that he would never fall away or never doubt, because in the Bible there are enough people who have had remarkable revelations of God and yet fall away. You probably know people who have said that they've had some sort of remarkable revelation of God. God somehow visited them in a special way, in a significant way, in a miraculous way. And yet now they don't even acknowledge Jesus as Lord. They've left it behind. It's not so much some special miracle. The thing that's going to ensure that we continue to the end is trusting in the Word of God and not doubting Him. So promises are made to Jacob on leaving the country, assuring him that God will be with him. As I said, I hope read chapters 29 to 31. It'll take 15 minutes. It's just of Genesis. Jacob arrives there. He finds an uncle even more cunning and shonky as Jacob, doesn't he? You don't want to always blame the mother, but it was her family that Laban was a part of. Jacob marries Leah and Rachel, has a large family, and his flocks increase, and he finds himself fleeing from his father-in-law, Uncle Laban. God brings him back home after 20 years, and he enters the land again. He has another amazing encounter with God, almost a reminder that God has done what He said He would do. Now his biggest fear, of course, is to face his brother Esau after 20 years. Let me read chapter 32, verse 22. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants and 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. And the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have wrestled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." He replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip of the lamb, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. It's an amazing story. We should make it very obvious here. It's obviously God could have killed him, couldn't he? Like, you know, because he says later on that... I'm lucky to survive. I saw the face of God. You know, I'm lucky to survive that. You know, he knows he's lucky. But this is a defining point in Jacob's life. Jacob fought with God and with everyone else. It's been his struggle for his whole life. Jacob is changed here, for God gives him a new name. And we need to understand that names meant something in Old Testament times. It was to reflect their character. No longer was he Jacob the deceiver, the trickster, the sly one. He was the one who wrestled with God and with man. Remember that this was a story that the nation of Israel were hearing just before they went into the Promised Land. They too have struggled with God. They too would travel through the wilderness for 40 years and they were going to enter the Promised Land. They too were fearful of what they were going to meet. Jacob was scared of meeting Esau. Israel was scared of meeting the inhabitants of the land. They were afraid too. But God was taking them there, and God would deal with those who were there, who hated them, who may curse them. If God said, "I will curse those who curse you." That's the promise. That's the confidence they crossed that river, Jordan, to go into the land. It was not by their strength, but their faith in God that would deliver them. That day, just think of what happened. That day, God grabbed Jacob, wrestled with him. Jacob saw God's face, and Jacob survived. Later on in that day, Esau would grab Jacob, would hug him, he would see his face, and he would survive. It was a day that changed Jacob. It changed who he was. And the children of Israel need to remember that story when they were coming out of Egypt, when they were going into the Promised Land. And every time they'd have a roast lamb, they would not eat that part of the hip because of remembering that. Have you noticed how God brings about his plans, his purposes, and how he uses undeserving people, yet he shows love and acceptance? That's a wonderful truth, because that means there's hope for you and me. I don't know anyone more undeserving than myself to experience the love of God, the forgiveness of God. I don't know anyone undeserving than myself is to be an instrument of God's purposes in the world. Yet, these other people give an example of that God uses even people like us. Even people like you and me. Our sin does not stop us, because God deals with it here. The bread and the juice reminds us of God dealing with our sin. Our sin no longer stops us having a relationship with God. Jesus, now remember God gave them three promises: land, a family, and a blessing to the world. You know the blessing to the world, don't you? Jesus. That's the fulfillment of the promise. It took 2,000 years for that to be fulfilled. And in some ways, we're still waiting to see it finally wrapped up. And one day we will worship the Lamb who was slain in that heavenly host. But God uses undeserving people, sinful people, people who are prepared to trust God, to hold on to forgiveness in Jesus. So does that mean you're actively free to go out and sin any way you want? You can show God's greatness by going out and sinning? Well, Paul deals with that, doesn't he? You need to read Romans. That'd be foolish talk. That'd be like a man saying that he's going out to cheat on his wife, come back and say sorry, to show how loving and caring his wife is. So that's ridiculous. That's a silly thought. How much more is it when we think that way of God? We're called to cooperate with what God is doing in the world. I just want to make sure you guys know, you know what God is doing, don't you? God is leading all of human history to the point where all the knees will bow to Jesus. We want to do that willingly. We want people to be able to bow the names of Jesus to Jesus willingly. But there will be those who will do it unwillingly. But to do it willingly, they need to hear about forgiveness first, don't they? They need to hear about love. And that's why I'm suggesting that you were placed here in Western Sydney. You have your work, you have your home, you have your family, you have your friends. You are the walking, talking billboard that shows God has sent His love into the world through Jesus to make, and He sent us into the world to make known Jesus. Our society wants to define us as, with words such as consumers or workers or employers or taxpayers. God gives us His identity, His family name. My family name obviously is Kalman, but I have a far more significant family name, and that is Yahweh. That is God's name. I bear God's name. You also bear God's name. Whoever's found in Jesus bears that name. That is our purpose, to make known the loving God that we know and serve, and His blessing to the whole world, which is the Lord Jesus Christ. So Lynn's going to come and pray for us.